Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to the 20th edition of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes.
And I'm Ben Tully. Make sure you check us out on our various internet presences, including on Facebook, and emailing the show at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget, every so often, and very rarely nowadays it seems, Tiny sometimes streams games live at Twitch TV, which is twitch.tv/tinygrimes.
I'm hoping to do it a bit more next week with the new Battle of Hoth cards available. I haven't actually played them at all in Octagon. It should be fun to get out there and play a little bit on Octagon again.
But we have had a chance to play with the new cards in real life quite a bit.
Yeah, we have.
Considering the fact that our last podcast was the day before the new Force Pack dropped. So we had all of this like stuff, and then immediately anybody who was listening to it, later that week was going, why are they talking about the new Force Pack? And I think the reason we did that, because we talked about discussing it, because at that point the spoilers were up, was that our predictions of just reading cards and never getting to play with them, before we get to play with them, are always wildly wrong. So we just wanted to, get a chance to play with the cards first before we made any bold accusations about the various pods.
Yeah, it does seem to be that we, meaning me, are often quite off on certain cards. But I feel pretty confident, having played with the packs 2 weeks, that we can make some reasoned evaluations of the cards.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I hope so, too. I mean, that would be what we're here for.
All right, well, let's start with Vader's Fist. I actually ran this pod in a Sith deck for that tournament we had a couple weeks ago. And to be honest, it didn't really go that well. But the pod does look good.
Really? And what type of... So it was in a Sith deck.
I took my Sith Visions deck. I left in the Tatooine objective with Bib Fortuna for resources. Took out some other stuff and tried to run sort of a standard Sith control with Spice Visions. And it really didn't work out well at all.
Interesting. I ran it in a Trooper deck, where the Troopers kind of just added more fuel to the fire to a standard, a modified version of a Trooper deck from, the Trooper decks that existed before General Veers came on the table.
And Trooper decks are still bad? Is that what we're finding?
Well, no. So what I found in that testing was that the Trooper decks were actually really, really good, except for, and I bet you can predict what I'm about to say here, except for when Han Solo got on the table, and yeah, Particularly Han Solo early or Han Solo with Trust Your Feelings. And all of a sudden, my Trooper deck, which had a pretty solid win ratio for that first day of testing, because that was the one I wanted to try out, completely just, there was almost nothing I could do about it, right? I had, 6 or 7 Troopers on the table, and Han hit the table, and I was like, well, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and if Han is in every mains deck, and Han is in the sleuth decks, Han is in like 80% of decks, which makes the troopers really difficult. But let's talk about these troopers anyway.
Yeah, let's get into the pod. I was about to say we should probably actually talk about what's in the pod.
Yeah, so pod itself is phenomenal, the objective, and that's why I ran it. The reason I lost is because I never drew this objective. I feel like had I drawn the objective, I would have done a lot better. But essentially, if it's undamaged, your opponent's reserve value is reduced by 1. And what do you want to do? Play Battles of Hoth with it. So even if they do damage it, you just cycle your Battle of Hoth, pull off the damage, and as long as they're not blowing it up, you're in business.
Sure. I mean, what's really kind of just crazy in terms of like lucky objective setups is any number of Vader Fists comboed with the General's Imperative.
Comboed with Killing Cold.
Killing Cold will be helpful there because you can clear the damage back off of it once it gets high. But I, in, just in general, just for like, even in a situation where, you know, you don't have the Killing Cold, I've seen different iterations of this. I've seen two Vader's Fist, one General's Imperative. So General's Imperative raises your reserve value while it's undamaged for those who cannot remember. So two Vader's Fist to and a General's Imperative. So that first turn, you're talking about seven cards for the dark side and four cards for the light side. So they're not even getting to see a new card if they wanted to discard one. They have to discard down two. Yeah. And also vice versa, you can have it's slightly less potent, but the two General's Imperatives, one Vader Fist. So now you have eight cards to five. And so both of those, I mean, the one particular, the seven to four is just so brutal for that light side player that first turn.
Yeah, I actually, the reason I ran that pod is because I did a test game with TGO and he happened to flop two of the Vader's Fists. I never did a damage to either of them all game because he was able to play a bunch of stuff. My hand was kind of subpar. I just never was able to push through the damage. I finally got a damage on it and then he'd Battle of Hoth it away and it was just miserable.
Yeah, I've heard some horror stories from people who are like, well, this card has broken the game for me.
Yeah, it seems like a card that if you can get it and get it to stick, you win. If not, it's a bit troubling because the pot itself, I'm going to say, is a little lackluster. And the reason I say that is because it feels like a support pod without a resource.
Sure.
So it sort of hampers you in your decision-making for deck building.
I mean, I can see that. So let's go through the cards in here before we start talking about if it's a support pod with resources and lack of thereof. So there are two 501st troopers in this pod, and they are two cost units with two health. They have a blaster and a white blast damage, and they gain a black blast damage if they're attacking a Hoth objective. So that's pretty cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. The 501st Legion, which is a four cost unit with four health, and it has four black unit damage. There is the
This guy is good. Like, yeah. He's the reason I played the pod. I figured Vader's Fist holds down their draw, and then this guy is the anti-Falcon.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people have seen.
Yeah, they get Falcon, you get him. They cannot attack with Falcon, or the Falcon's just going to die.
Unless they know that for a fact they can win that edge battle.
I mean, either way, they can still go in, lose the edge, and bounce him. But the point is, it's a good anti-Falcon card, and that's why I played it. But the problem is I didn't get that or the Fist.
The next card is the E-Web Heavy Repeating Blaster, which is a one-cost neutral enhancement, which says, action focuses enhancement to have a target trooper unit gain a black blast damage until the end of the phase. Tiny, ask me what I thought this enhancement actually, ask me what this enhancement said in my mind.
Yeah, I think you pulled a Tiny Grimes in this one, didn't you?
I thought
it did everybody.
I mean, I was super stoked. I thought it said every trooper. Like, I thought it was orbital bombardment for troopers.
Yeah.
And to me, and I don't know why, because somebody pointed this out, but to me, having a one-cost enhancement that did that totally made sense.
I was like,
troopers are pretty weak against Han, right?
Which we
discussed at the beginning of this. Like, so they're pretty fragile. So like, you have to give me a really big incentive to play them.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my incentive. I want to play the E-Web Heavy Repeating Blaster. You know, it can be targeted by Saboteur, like all these other things. You know, you can take control of it with the other card that allows you, the Smugglers and Spies card, at least you can take control of an enhancement. And I was like, okay, so there's enough removal, troopers are weak, and then I actually, when I first played it, I was like, oh, I have to focus this to do this. it only does it once. I'm less thrilled about this card now.
Yeah, to me, that card is why this pod is not as playable universally. It's still going to be great in a trooper deck, but if this was two cost with a resource or one cost and a resource, suddenly it becomes a valid support pod. Leaving the resource off this feels like it's a niche pod that you're choosing over something like Vader or some other good pod because it doesn't have the resource.
Sure. I could definitely see it being a niche pod. And I wonder, that'd be really amazing analysis to go back and do. Are all the pods that don't have resources, are they really just niche pods?
No. I think they're one of two things. I think if it doesn't have a resource, it's either a niche pod or it's a pod with a super-powered main that you're relying on. So, like, Chewbacca, Vader, those are pods that are just, like, a really strong character.
But, I mean, it doesn't hold true for all of them.
No.
I mean, Han, Falcon, Luke. I mean,
right, no, I'm not saying all of them do. I'm just saying if you don't have a resource, you're either a superpower unit or you are a niche pod.
Hmm.
Or you're just garbage.
or you're somewhere below that.
Yeah. Hmm. But that, like, when I'm evaluating a pod, the first thing I do is I look at, does it have a resource? All right, now I'm going to evaluate it from there.
Sure. Well, I mean, so you're talking about how, like, in a Sith pod, if you tried to sub this out for something else, especially if it's one of the ones that you have your resources for, you've just made your deck worse, is what you're saying. And I don't disagree. I think that's probably fine.
But in a Sith mains deck, like, if your goal is to get Palpatine out and Vader out, then it does make it worse because it's just less likely you can do that.
Sure. And so then if it's going into the trooper deck, which you did not try, right? Am I correct in that assumption?
No, I tried it. It was terrible.
You tried it in a trooper deck?
Yes.
Okay. I was just saying, because in that situation, right, like, you're generally running that out of Navy, and Navy gives you the resources in other ways, right? In a lot of the other pods that you can include there.
I think it works great in a Navy deck. I'm not saying that this is bad for a trooper deck. What I'm saying is trooper decks in it as an entity don't work if Han is big.
Sure.
And I'd like to talk about that real quick. Why is it that they don't work? What does Han wreck so hard?
I think what happens pretty consistently with it is that a lot of the troopers, there's a bunch of troopers that are smaller in size, right? So you have the troopers that, so Esper troopers are only one health, and a couple of the Imperial ones in some of the key trooper pods are only one health. And so he immediately gets off that first shot that takes out those one cost guys.
Yep.
And then except for, I mean, so like if we use the 501st trooper here as an example, right, it only has one black unit damage, right? So unless you have a heat of battle or some way to add another one, it can strike Han first, but then Han still gets his two unit damage himself, is, you know, targeted with targeted strike. So he can now start taking out any of the two cost trooper units which are out there, which is a majority of them at that point, with exactly. only the snow trooper, what is it, the snow trooper vanguard being three and the 501st legion being four. All the rest are two.
But the bigger problem to me is that what makes troopers viable are cards like Veers, and Han can just target strike Veers right off the board. And suddenly all of those troopers, which are already super vulnerable to everything, let alone Han, just become substantially worse. So my solution is make a Protect Officer card. I think that would go a long way towards keeping the bonus for having troopers intact. Yes, you're going to lose troopers, but isn't that the point? They're really cheap. They're fodder. They're supposed to be dying, but at least you get to keep the bonuses for having them.
Yeah, that would be a pretty good solution to it. We'll put that on the list of, if one of us wins Worlds, this will be the type of card I might design to make a specific deck.
Yes,
viable.
You do that.
What? That would be awesome. That would be great. The community would love it.
Our definition of awesome is different.
That's
okay.
That's fair enough. And then the last card, rounding out the pod, for those people who love to win edge battles, is the Battle of Hoth.
Yeah.
And
what
so, I mean,
cards.
Yeah, I mean, you can, with that type of Imperial deck with the Vader's Fist in there, you're looking at sometimes being able to run anywhere between 6 and 8, like, Battles of Hoth, 6 and 7, I think, if I remember correctly. 7 was maybe the most I had heard at one point, which is huge. Not only are you removing damage, like, pretty much every time from your Hoth objectives, or dealing it to your opponent, but you're almost consistently winning that edge battle because 3 is hard to beat. 2 threes is even harder to beat.
Yeah. Battle of Hoth is my favorite defensive edge card. You can put it in, smile, and pass, and they're screwed. They have to assume it's a twist, and it's hard to play that it's a Battle of Hoth because they have to put in so much to get over it. And then if it is a twist, they're like, oh, I just put in 4 against a twist. Now I'm certainly going to lose. It's a really, really tough edge card to play around.
It's great. I love it. I love the way it manipulates the edge battles in that way.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on to the other dark side objective, which is just simply amazing.
Yeah.
In my
unstoppable advance.
Yeah. And so this is a Navy pod, Navy affiliation only, for those of you who like to cheat during tournaments and not double check what affiliation you're running with your objectives.
I'm going to call that usually accidental cheating. I don't.
Yes. Oh, no, and I'm not saying anybody's doing it on purpose.
Done that.
I don't think anybody has done it on purpose. I do think that it becomes a problem when the TO reminds you. And everybody goes, okay, thanks, T.O., for the reminder. And they all mutter under their breath. It's like, God, what is that guy talking about? No one's going to make that stupid mistake. And then they sit down and they get through three rounds and they get disqualified because they did not listen to the T.O. when they heard the recommendation.
Yep.
Don't do that, people.
Yep.
It makes the T.O.'s life even harder. And all they did was just trying to help you.
Yep. And now they don't even get to play in events. And you're making
money. Now they don't even get to play in events.
At least they have more free time to DQ people.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's all that FFG's hoping for right here is that they'll actively, patrol the tournament and be like, DQ'd. Be like, for what? It's like, well, you didn't click the dial fast enough. You're out. Just leave. Take your stuff with you.
All right. So, Unstoppable Advance, pretty ho-hum, but it has two resources. And two resources, when you're playing big units, can be quite helpful.
And why do you say that, Tony? Why would you say, that big units? Are there any big units in this objective set?
I noticed that there were a few big units, yeah. I sure did. If you just look at his combat icons, 4 cost, 3 strength, 2 black unit, 2 white blast, looks a bit lackluster, actually. For 4, I'd expect to do more blast damage out of a Navy deck. So that's a start. I'm a little disappointed.
Really?
Take it from
there. I don't think I would have been that disappointed with those icons. Maybe it's a little undercosted, just if we were just talking icons and that was the only thing it had. But I don't think I would be overly disappointed with that.
I wouldn't play the card.
Huh, interesting. Anyway, but continue because it just gets better from there.
Yeah, it has shielding. Right there helps a lot with the enhancement that gives it a black blast immediately just from having shielding. Makes it hard to lock him down. And then he has this beautiful reaction. After this unit is focused to strike, instead of resolving its combat icons, discard a target non-limited enhancement from play. Ben, when did you realize that it doesn't say attacking to strike?
I think it was after my opponent played the Echo-based shield generator, and that was pretty much the only thing they played their entire turn, and they attacked, and I defended with my AT-AT, and I put a shield on it, and I was like, oh, look what this, if I could just get rid of that. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. I'm starting to think, especially against an enhancement deck, he's one of the best defenders in the game. Because since he has shielding, it's almost impossible to lock him down with tactics. So he's going to get his strike off. And yeah, he's not going to kill units. But if he can blow up important enhancements, that can be even better.
I mean, there's a lot of enhancements, right, that would just be monumental to remove. Against your opponent, right? We're talking about things like Echo Caverns and Trust Your Feelings and Speeder Launch Bay, which we'll get to in the as part of the Force Pack this year. Yeah, and so it's just all around, I really enjoy this card. It's an enhancement-hating, terrible card of destruction.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So there are two of them in this. Yeah. Objective. So that's money right there. Yeah. But moving on.
We got the AT Assault Formation. Cost 6. So this bad boy is pricey. Has 4 health, but he's got the icons you want in a Navy deck. 1 black blast. 1 black unit, 3 black blast. And then he's got shielding, and he has a home 1-ish kind of interrupt. When this unit is focused to strike, deal 1 damage to each enemy Hoth objective. Hey, Tiny, speeder deck. Hey, speeder deck. How'd you like them apples?
Hey, Tiny, I have a question for you.
What's that?
When did you realize that this doesn't say attacking, focused to strike for attacking, but you could also do it on defense?
Yeah, I didn't get to do this in a game. I read the card and realized it, but thought how great it would be.
I got to do it. I had a Walker deck I was trying out, and when I played it and then realized, and so I went on defense. I was like, was like, okay, I'll strike. I'll do one damage to that unit, and I do one damage to each of your objectives. And they went, how do you do that? And I was like, well, it says here, damage each of the enemy Hoth objectives. And they were like, oh, come on.
Yep. And again, it's got shielding, so what are you going to do?
Yep.
It's hard to lock it down. Like, even if you attack with it, it doesn't have elite. It costs 6. You're a little worried, and then you go, oh, yeah, it has shielding. He's got to tactics this guy twice. That's hard to pull off.
Yep, it's a little bit more difficult.
And then, of course, just to make your life a little easier, the one-cost orbital resupply station reduced the cost to play each Navy vehicle with a printed cost of 4 or higher by 1. So what I'm telling you, Ben, is for 6, you can play 2 AT-ATs.
Yeah.
That's pretty
good. Yeah, no, this card becomes ridiculous in decks that have big Imperial vehicles. And so, I mean, you put it out there, and putting one out there and playing multiple big vehicles, it's great. You get your money back, your resource investment. Having 2 out there and getting to do things like use 8 resources to play 2 Death Squadron Star Destroyers, or a Death Squadron Star Destroyer and the Devastator, or, you know, an AT-AT formation and an AT-AT for 7, and you get to play something else for 1, and it's just, you know, I never really, you know, by the midpoint of the game in most of my Navy games, it's never a period of time, like, by that point in time, I'm generating 8 resources a game, like, with the mix of the double resources on my objectives, and, you know, maybe Death Squadron Command Center as one of my enhancements, plus, you know, the mix of Imperial Command Room and, you know, Command Center and stuff like that. I'm generating that many resources. So they'll be able to like draw a hand and be like, oh, look, there's 3 big units in here. I'll play 2 of them. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's almost borderline unfair. Like, what is the light side deck supposed to do about that?
I have no idea. I haven't asked that question. I've been having too much fun torturing people with the dark side deck.
Yeah, no, it's funny how that worked, where there was that stretch where light side was dominating, and then this pack came out, and we were like, maybe dark side's the best again. I don't know.
Dark side's pretty good. Dark side Navy definitely got a big boost. These Walker decks are really nice.
Yeah, they're really tough to deal with. And then my favorite card in the whole pack is the last card. Aggressive Assault, costs 2 force icons. You have to have a Hoth objective out. That's okay. I played it in my Walker deck. That's mostly Hoth, mostly Battles of Hoth, winning all the edge battles. Mm-hmm. Action, deal 1 damage to each enemy objective. That can be real strong. Now think about this. You play Tarkin, you do 3 damage to a couple objectives, they're feeling all right, and then boom, you play Aggressive Assault.
Yep.
It's not bad.
And one of your favorite things to do, and I know you left it for me to talk you up about how great your play style is, and you've done this on this, I think, did I see you do it on the stream? Maybe not on the stream. Yeah, no, you did it on the stream at one point. You
Ben,
said,
Ben, it's my secret tech. What are you doing?
I don't think it's that secret anymore. what you did was you did 4 damage to an objective. You waited for your light side opponent to refresh. In their refresh phase, you then played this, blowing up the objective after they would have had the chance to replace the objective that was destroyed. And all of a sudden, they're down a resource or 2 resources, depending on which objective you blew up. And the first time I saw you do it, I was like, that's just a little mean tiny. Like, like, it's just mean to do that. Like, I know you can. It's like the card's designed to let you do that. But, like, that's just cruel. Like,
yeah.
Like, why would you do that?
That's how you win in this game. You got to be cruel. You got to stop that Falcon from coming out. You have to deprive them of resources.
Yeah, sometimes it makes sense.
Now, here's my favorite play I've done with this so far. On Wednesday, I was playing Andrew, and I did 4 damage to 1 objective. And he's looking at me kind of funny because I had orbital bombardment out, so I could have done more. And then I had another one that had 4 on it that needed 4, so I did 3 more to that one. He's looking at me funny, and he's like, I don't understand what you're doing. And I was like, I know. I totally forgot and made a misplay there that you were going to shield the objective. And he's like, oh, okay, because I had to knock down 3 or he was going to come back and win most likely. And so then I send everyone after the last objective with tons of white icons, and he's looking at it, and he'd have to double focus a bunch of guys, and he's like, well, I mean, you can't win. You screwed up. That misplay cost you, so I'm going to say unopposed. And I was like, ah, darn it, Andrew. I was hoping you'd double focus those guys. Fine. And we do the battle, and I blow it up. And then he's like, all right, is it my turn? I'm like, no, I'm an aggressive assault and win. And he was like, wait, what's that card? So that was fun.
You are the meanest troll. These are people who are friends, Tiny. No wonder you've earned all those nicknames in our playgroup.
No, the reason I did it that way was so that he wouldn't block the last edge battle, because right. He would think the game's over anyway. Because that last edge battle I would have had to win. I think I would have won it. I think I would have won anyway, but I wanted to just make it a no-brainer.
Mm.
So, that was pretty sweet.
Mm.
So, Aggressive Assault, really, really good card.
Yeah, that's what you say. All right, so let's move on to them light side cards.
Let's do that.
Let's do that. So this first one is talk about the antithesis of the walkers, obviously, and everybody knows because we all love Star Wars.
I can see the harpoon coming out now.
Oh, my God. Is the speeders. And so the objective that comes along with in this set, in this Battle of Hoth set, is attack pattern Delta. One resource, 5 health, rebel objective with the action. If you control more Hoth objectives than your opponent, look at the top card of your deck. If it is a vehicle unit with cost 2 or lower, put it into play. Limit once per turn.
I love this objective.
Yes, I know you do.
I realize it's kind of luck-oriented, but if you build a deck with enough speeders, it's about 50-50. And I had, this is probably dumb, but I wanted to try it. I had a choice of having 2 of them right off. Now, it's probably a bad idea, because if you fail on the first one, you're obviously failing on the second one. But on my opponent's turn, they were dark side, they played a unit, I triggered it, played a unit, they played a unit, I triggered my other one, played another unit. And the guy just looked at me like, what's happening here? How is that fair in any way that your turn is the same as mine? So, this card can be really strong.
Yep, I mean, I've seen a bunch of situations with this card, and we can talk about, and I think we should talk about kind of like the way the matchups play out between speeder decks and walker decks and speeder decks and other decks. But I've also seen the opposite, where like you just, you know, you triggered on your opponent's turn, you got nothing. You get all of your 2-cost vehicles in your hand, you play them, you triggered on your turn, nothing. Which means that means there's nothing to do for your opponent's turn, right? Because you haven't changed the top card of your deck in any way. You know, you draw your next hand, it's all 2-cost vehicles again, you're like, come on! I don't want them in my hand, I want them on the top of my deck! Well, speaking of 2-cost vehicles, this objective set comes with a couple of them in there. A
couple of good ones, too.
A couple of great ones. So the first one is a 1-cost, 1-health unit, Rogue Leader, which has a black blast damage, and then the text, when you control Rogue 2, this unit gains a black tactics icon. And for those of you wondering, I don't know where Rogue 2 is. Like, where am I supposed to come up with a Rogue 2? I only have Rogue 3 and Rogue Leader right now. Don't worry, Rogue 2 is also in this objective set. It's a 2-cost, 2-health vehicle unit with 2 black unit damage, and this unit gains an edge-enabled blast damage for each attacking speeder you control.
Yeah, this must make Tyler very happy that this card exists now, because he played the card where it says name a card in your hand when it didn't exist, and he named Rogue 2, and I had Rogue 3 in my hand, and I was like, no, I do not have a card named Rogue 2 in my hand. Are you sure that's what you want to ask for? And he's like, well, the speeder, the good speeder. And I was like, yeah, I don't have Rogue 2. And then I immediately played Rogue 3. And he was a little bit mad.
Yeah, well, you,
but like, it exists now.
Like,
so I,
like I said, Tiny, there's a reason why you have all those nicknames in our meta.
I must not hear them. They must be when I'm not looking.
Yeah, we all mutter it under our breath when you're not looking.
But I love Rogue Leader. I've seen a lot of people say they don't like him. But a 1-cost unit that has a black blast and gets protected by the smuggler vehicles, sign me up, man. And yeah, then, whoa, it randomly gets a tactics icon too? Yeah, I'll take that one.
It's pretty good. It's one of those things about speeder decks that I see that if you can get out a bunch of your speeders, right? If you can get out a bunch of your unique ones, so there's 3 now, and a bunch of your non-unique ones, and you just have a bunch of speeders on the table, I mean, it's really hard to stop them.
Yeah. And they generally do some sick stuff.
Yeah. And, there's ways to keep them around. And generally, I haven't seen, you know, it takes a lot of effort to kind of sometimes ping them down depending on what your deck, the dark side opponent is playing. And they can just sit there, right? And Rogue Leader with that tactics icon is pretty bomb. bonkers.
Yeah, my favorite thing to do is not put all my speeders in one battle. Let's say I have a battle of Hoth out, maybe I have two out. That's happened a lot. I'll just put like two in to make sure I win the edge battle, and then play one of those other guys with all those edge-dependent icons. You know, play the guy that has three edge-dependent blast icons, play the other guy that has the edge-dependent tactics icon, and you just slip them in the battle that you know you're going to win. You're able to do a lot more damage than just, you know, rolling in with a couple speeders and have your opponent say, well, I guess that'll be unopposed because you're going to win anyway.
Right. Yeah, no, those guys are pretty good. The rest of the pod includes the neutral snow speeder unit, the one that we've seen before, 2 cost, 1 health.
Yep, perfect synergy with this deck.
Yep, it continues to add to it. We then have a 2 cost enhancement, Rebel Enhancement, that generates 1 resource, the Snow Speeder Launch Bay.
This card is amazing, and this is exactly what I wish the Dark Side counterpart Trooper one looked like.
Sure, yeah, now I can understand why you'd want it modeled after this, because it has reaction. After you strike with a speeder unit, deal 1 damage to a target enemy vehicle unit. Craziness. If the target is a walker unit, also place 1 focus token on it. Limit 1 per phase.
Yeah, that is... Remember the first time we played this and we didn't realize it said limit 1 per phase?
Like I knew there had to be something, because when you started to be like, and that one, and that one, and that one, I was like, no, there's no way you can tactics out all 3 of my walkers right now.
Oh, I wish that had worked. No, already it's pretty darn good. If you're playing, whenever I see my opponent flip up a walker deck and I'm playing my speeder deck, I smile a bit inside and think, if I get that launch bay, you're going down.
Mm-hmm. But, let's talk about, hold on for half a second, Tiny. We'll talk exactly about what you just said right there. Once we round out this objective set, which includes a Battle of Hoth.
Yeah, which is phenomenal.
Which we've already covered, so we don't have to say that again. So let's talk about what you just said right there, which is when somebody flips up a walker deck, you get pretty excited when you're playing your speeder deck. Is there any time that is not the case?
When I see that AT-AT, I get a little nervous.
What about when they flip up 3 Hoth objectives to your 3 Hoth objectives?
Me? I don't worry that much, because I play the enhancement that gives me a bonus Hoth objective.
Sure, Echo Base, but and I'm going to play a completely devil's advocate here, is so now all of your enhancements are turned off until you find, or all of your objectives are turned off until you find that enhancement.
Yep.
So you have to dig through it. And as you've already pointed out, you're already terrified of the AT-AT. So when you play that 2-cost enhancement and you're all stoked and excited because now you have 4 and they defend effectively with that AT-AT, what do you do? What sound do you make at that point?
I believe it's weeping.
I was going to say it probably sounds like womp womp.
Yeah, I would think that definitely happens. The speeder walker matchup is a really interesting matchup, because you have to play it much more carefully than any other matchup. It's much more of like the chess match. I compare it to the seasons matchup in Game of Thrones, where one little misstep and you probably lose. Like if you play the launch bay, or sorry, if you play the echo base at the wrong moment and it lets them blow it up, then you're in trouble. If you attack and forget they're going to be able to blow it up, you're in trouble. You got to be able to tactics out that AT-AT. Handle him, do something.
Sure. I mean, and so this is what I was starting to get the feel of, right? We've already kind of moved on now. It's been a couple weeks for this. But when everybody was, that first day, when everybody's playing speeder decks versus walker decks, what I was getting the impression of was that if you were playing an outright speeder deck that didn't include, especially in this case, if it didn't include Echo Base at all, you lost to an all-out Hoth Dark Side deck, which there are a bunch of floating around, right?
Pretty much an auto loss.
Auto loss. So then there was a quick adjustment. Everybody realized that they put that in there. So now it's like one of those things where if you can get 3 Hoth objectives out and your opponent has 3 of Hoth objectives out, if you can get that Echo Base and they haven't, your opponent hasn't quite had the time to set up to get the AT-AT into play or a couple AT-ATs on the table, you might be able to get through it and win with the speeder deck. But what I saw was like...
And win quick with a speeder deck.
Yeah. And so what I was seeing, though, was that... So a speeder deck up against kind of a standard Navy and to some degree, maybe a little less, like a Sith control, those speeder decks, you know, they had no problem, right? You're not running a lot of Hoth. Those speeder decks were hitting hard. You were getting a bunch of speeders out with your attack pattern Delta. They all had tactics, and they were doing all sorts of crazy damage. I'm flailing my arms. Nobody can see that, but there's a lot of arm flailing happening right now. And so that seemed to be really interesting to me. The speeder deck lost to the walkers, which, you know, at least more consistently lost to the walkers, which seems very thematic because they lose in the movie. But, you know, if you happen to come up with against a dark side deck that wasn't using a number of Hoth objectives that were more than yours, you had it was like a field day. Like you could run all over them. And so I think that's really interesting. So it's like a meta call, right?
Yeah.
Like you go to a tournament and you have a speeder deck that you want to play, and you have to make that call. It's like, this speeder deck is going to be great if I don't run into an all Hoth dark side deck.
Yep. And I actually lost to a Sith deck because if a Sith deck is tuned up to beat sleuths and it just drops a bajillion characters on the board, it's really hard to deal with, actually, because you are only getting so many speeders, and yeah, you're winning the edge battle, so you're doing a bunch of damage, but then they're turning around and killing all your speeders with all their dudes that they put out.
Sure,
so,
as they have
again, it's kind of that race. Like if they get the perfect setup, you're in trouble as the rebels. But if you get the perfect setup, they're in trouble. And then if you both get a mediocre setup, I feel like the rebels have the advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is there was a period of time, you know, when Rogue 3 first came out, and we had Hoth Operations versus Sith. I mean, people were trying to make light side Hoth decks. I think that the takeaway message at that point in time was like, well, this will be a lot better when more speeders come out.
Yep.
Because essentially that was like relying on the combo of I'll get Rogue 3 with Wedge, I win. If I don't, I lose. And now the combo seems to be a lot more dispersed. It's like, if I get some portion of my speeders with the right enhancements, I win. Which I think is a lot more, you know, just spread out. It gives you a little bit more options. It gives you a little bit slightly more consistency and redundancy than just like, if I get Rogue 3 with Wedge, I win. If not, then, well, it was a good game. Good try.
Yeah. I still feel like it's less consistent than Smugglers, but it's way more consistent than it used to be. And it packs more of a punch than Smugglers. So you can win real quick. Things go right.
Yeah. No,
And what I mean by Smugglers real quick is Smugglers mains, not sleuth decks. I know it's going to sound bad. I don't consider sleuth decks a real viable deck because they're pretty easy to just tech against and beat.
Sure. Or at least if you know what's coming to play against it a little bit in the correct way, that'll give you an advantage over them.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a different type, right? It's like one of those things is it's just like in the tournament report that I wrote up on Card Game DB for our little tournament that we had. I played sleuths that game. With the Jedi affiliation running Red 5, as like I made that decision, going like, I don't think anybody's gonna tech for sleuths because we've been talking bashing them really hard lately, and these AT-ATs are out, so there's gonna be a lot of big units to sleuth around, and I did pretty good in that tournament doing that. But I mean, that's I would not recommend that. Like, don't go to Worlds being like, well, no one's gonna be expecting sleuths.
You never know. That might be legit.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, people might be so over sleuths by then that a sleuth deck wins Worlds, and it could be you.
It could be, you as in, like, you're pointing at the screen now.
I'm pointing at our listeners. It could be you.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. So this is a pod that we had.
I call this the Smuggler's Den pod.
Because we had the pleasure of spoiling it. What seems like years ago now.
Yeah, really.
It probably
does.
Was only like 2 months. If I think about it, really, I'd have to look up what the date of that was. But we can go over. We really kind of beat it to death. Did we review it before Edge of Darkness came out?
Yeah, we sure did.
We sure did.
So we reviewed it in a completely different meta.
Right. Yes, we did. So let's go over. Remind everybody what's in there, and then we'll talk about it, how it stands in the new meta.
Sure. Undercover Dealings, the objective itself is pretty darn strong. 1 resource, 5 health, but it says after your opponent refreshes, draw to your reserve value if you can control fewer units than your opponent. So if your opponent is playing some sort of swarm deck, you're instantly going to be drawing up every single turn so that when you go to play defense, yes, smugglers are hurting for edge icons, but if you have a whole handful of cards, not only will you have more icons, it lets you dig through your deck all the faster to find whatever it is that your deck is supposed to do. You desperately need that Falcon. Guess what? You're going to get that Falcon, you know, twice as fast as you normally would see him.
I love this objective, as we covered in that spoiling. Yep. And when we were spoiling, I love this objective.
You know what this objective is missing?
What?
You know what this objective is missing?
What?
A resource.
You mean this set is missing a resource?
Yes, this objective set is missing a resource.
Sure. Okay, so let's see what else is in here before we start harping on its lack of resources. There is a 1-1 unit, smuggler's unit, that has the white blast damage, the shadow operative, which has the action, return this unit to hand. So it's a great way to trigger your objective if it happens to be the one card keeping you from having less units than your opponent.
Yep, it's a good way to put him in, attack with him. They either have to block, and then you just, you know, lose the edge and return him to hand, or they don't block, and you get damage across.
Right, and if you happen to be playing some of the other smuggler objectives, I know they're related to sleuths, but not necessarily because you're running them exclusively, but lucrative, not lucrative contracts, wow, okay. Across the Noet sector and or raise the stakes. You know, it becomes a much more potent, you know, 2 to 3 damage that it's doing.
Yeah, exactly. You get one of these out first turn. Let's say they put out a first turn Vader. You put out two of these guys in a sleuth, and they're looking at the board going, wow, what am I supposed to do? Like, yeah. This is a lot of damage you're going to do first turn.
It'll be a lot of damage. All right, so next card is a neutral enhancement, the Holdout Blaster. It's 1 cost. You have to enhance a smuggler character unit, limit 1 per unit. When you control fewer units than your opponent, double enhanced units combat icons.
Yeah, this makes me drool a bit.
I mean, this was the card that we were just like crazy about.
Yeah, this card looks like shit.
When we got to spoil this. I mean, everybody at this point, I think, can think of a bunch of cards they would love to double the icons on, ranging from Chewbacca to Han to Lando.
Even the Twi'lek Smuggler would be.
I was going to say, like, or the Cloud City Operative.
Yep. And anyone with a tactics icon, they suddenly turn into a double tactics icon guy. They're like Jabba. You just put this on them, they become Jabba with unit and blast damage. Yep. That's pretty good.
Yep, pretty nice. The next card is a 2-cost event, Smuggler event. Narrow escape interrupt when you're. Opponent chooses a single target for a non-capturing card effect. Choose a new target for that effect. The new target is chosen as if you executed the effect.
Yeah, this card, it's hard because you got to save 2. So I played a deck with it in it. I even had it in my hand. You know, I'm thinking like, okay, I'm playing a Walker deck. They have the AT-AT even on the table. If I can find a good enough enhancement for them to target, I can turn it back on their Death Squadron command. And this is going to be amazing. But guess what? I could never find a time where I wasn't losing bad enough to save 2 back. I had to just keep putting units on the board.
Sure. Here's a question for you, Tiny. And I don't have an answer to this, so I don't know if you do. So it says the new target is chosen as if you executed the effect. So if you do this to copy an event and then use that event to target the Death Squadron Star Destroyer, can you not do that because you can't target the Death Squadron Star Destroyer with events?
That would be how I would read it.
Yeah, that's unfortunate for that one. But I was thinking about this, right? So this says when your opponent chooses a single target for a non-capturing card effect, right? I had this in my hand. I just kept looking at the board being like, what can I do this on that isn't an event card, right? Like, yeah. What can I do? Like, when my opponent goes to trigger something, what can I do? And a lot of them were kind of not that useful. But, you know, I'm thinking now, like, your opponent could go to trigger Admiral Mahdi. Right? You could play this, clear one of your own guys. And
wow,
then Admiral Mahdi doesn't have, still has one on him, so you can't use him as a resource.
That's really good. I mean, I think the obvious one is you play home 1, you save 2, they're obviously going to force lightning him, and then right. boom, they right. lose some unit.
Sure. I mean, that
the problem is they probably don't use a unit, lose a unit, because they're not going to have anyone focused because they just refreshed.
Sure, there's that possibility. But you could always retarget it to one of your own not home one units.
Yes, exactly. So you can keep your guys alive, which is nice.
Yeah, but I kept that's what I kept doing the other day when I had it in my hand. I kept being like, is there an effect that my opponent's about to trigger that I want to copy and screw them out of being able to use it and then getting some huge benefit out of it? And, you know, a lot of it is problematic, right? Like, I was like, somebody had Endor Gambit out. I was like, oh, maybe I'll do it on Endor Gambit, clear one of my vehicles. But that's only an after you refresh effect, right? So you can cancel it and choose somebody, but I don't know if you can even do all that type of stuff, right? Because I'm not refreshing anymore, like.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think we're going to have to get a better ruling on how that works, because it doesn't say. It just says the new target is chosen as if you executed the effect. So does that mean executed it, or does it check the method for execution?
I think it would check the method, right? So for that example of the Endor Gambit one, it's not my refresh phase. I didn't just refresh. I become the you there, right. And I don't get the, you know. And so I choose a new target for the effect. I can choose one of my units. Nothing happens. I think my opponent doesn't get the effect still. But I don't get any benefit from that. And so I kept coming across a lot of those. And so I guess that would be the downside. That's why I didn't do it to Imadi, because Imadi says after you refresh.
Interesting. Yeah, we're going to have to get a ruling on that. But certainly the card has the potential for being really good. How good it is going to depend on exactly what is eligible.
Sure.
Bottom line is, it's expensive for what it is.
It is very expensive. And then last but not least is another smuggler's event. It's one cost called Tactical Retreat. It says return any number of units you control to their owner's hands.
Yeah, that's a cool card.
Yeah, it's a very cool card. Lots of combo-y stuff that can go along with it.
Yep. I feel like this is a combo pod.
Mm-hmm.
Like some pods are support pods, some pods are big unit pods. This feels to me like a combo pod.
And you know what? Because it's a combo pod, I never know how many to run of it. Like, it's kind of one of those ones where I kind of want to run one, but if it really is that key to the combo, so maybe I need to run two of them. You know, am I running it? I mean, I really like the idea of, you know, this pod being great with, like, a Leia setup, right? I mean, imagine if you could do something like that, right? Where, like, you had Leia on the table, somebody with a holdout blaster, you do all your attacks, you get focused down, right? Your opponent thinks it's all over. You use Tactical Retreat to bring Leia back, to decrease your number to be less than your opponent's units who are now all focused out. You now get to strike all over again.
Yep. And the holdout blaster is now active as well.
Right. And then at the end of your turn, you're going to get to draw back up to your full reserve value. Like, you know, that's a great combo.
And by the way, when you drew up to your new reserve value, and then you put them all on the edge, and then the next turn you drew your second Leia.
Right. I mean, it's pretty cool. Yeah. But I mean, combos like that, I mean, you play those for fun. You don't always play those in like big tournaments.
Yeah, it's definitely an amazing funsies objective. The question is, because it doesn't have a resource, it doesn't have a big unit, can we work it into one of our ultra efficient top level decks?
Sure.
And I don't know the answer to that yet.
Do not know either. All right, and then the last objective set for this force pack is Hold the Line, which is a neutral light side objective. It's 2 resources, 4 health. It comes with 3 copies, 3 copies, folks, of the unit Hoth Rear Guard, which is a 3-cost unit, character trooper with 2 black unit damage with Protect Hoth keyword.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this pod. Or this unit even.
So did you see this ruling at all, Tiny? I'm going to ask you. It's been ruled that because it has Protect Hoth, you can do things like put the shield generator on the table, and trigger it, and instead of putting the damage on the shield generator, you can put the damage on the rear guard and still get the shield out of it.
Yep, that makes sense.
So.
That's
the only, beyond the obvious of protecting objectives, that's the only other.
Right. I feel like if this were reversed and this was a Sith card, that was like protect some Sith trait.
It could be Hoth, right? I mean, if it was Hoth for Sith, right, it would be crazy because dark side in general has all of the when undamaged Hoth abilities. While all the light side ones are when you have more than your opponent, right? It's like two disconnected abilities right there. We're like, this Hoth rear guard would have been awesome as a dark side card.
Yep.
Would have really pushed Hoth dark side cards over like the curve in a lot of ways.
Yep.
But instead you get it for the light side and it just kind of keeps you from dying, you know, if your opponent's attacking your objectives.
Yeah, and it just feels like light side doesn't want to pay 3 for a 2 health defender. I mean, if it had shielding also, so you could do tricks like give it a shield, soak the Hoth damage onto the shield, I think it'd be a lot better. As it stands, this is the one objective I haven't even bothered trying yet because I look at these guys and I just say, I don't think so. I just don't think they fit that well.
Yeah, I agree. Which is unfortunate because it comes with an amazing event.
Oh, it does.
Yep. So that event is a one-cost neutral event, coordinated strike. It's a maneuver as its trait, the go figure. It has reaction, detects reaction after you resolve a strike, immediately strike again with another ready participating unit you control. So this is something that it breaks the standard framework of the game, where the framework normally is you attack and your opponent attacks. This now goes you attack and you attack again.
Yeah, it messes a lot of stuff up. You know, your opponent's thinking like, okay, they're going to attack. Then I have two guys with tactics, so one of my tactics is going to get off, and I'm going to get to do this. And they're like, no, you're not. They're both dead.
Yeah, both dead. Woo!
Yeah, it seems to me to be, like, when I saw this event, I was like, yep, this goes in a speeder deck. No questions asked. And then as I looked at it more closely, I was like, oh, no.
A lot of questions to ask. Never mind.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Yep, and rounding out this objective set, like so many others in this force pack, is Battle of Hoth.
I hear that card is real good for winning edge battles.
I mean, I feel like somebody said it recently.
Yep, I think so. For me, this is one card why the speeder decks have gotten a lot better than the old Rebel decks. Remember the old Rebel decks where you'd have 3 cards in hand and be like, yep, there's no chance I can win an edge battle.
Sure.
Now if 2 of them are Battle of Hoth and the other one can easily be 2 icons, you win edge battles.
Even if only one of them's Battle of the Hoth, like, you still are doing pretty well.
I mean, I've had plenty of edge battles I've gone into with 3 cards in hand and 8 icons as my speeder deck, and that's just ridiculous.
Yep. I agree. It makes it much more viable in that sense.
Well, that concludes our discussion of the Battle of Hoth.
Yeah, it was a very nice force pack. I really think that this is, you know, there have been a couple of them where we've come out of it being like, kind of lackluster force pack. It didn't really change the meta that much. I'll try a couple of these pods for a little while. We'll see what happens. But this one's one of those ones where I'm like, well, we're going to be seeing speeders for a long time. And I have a feeling it's going to be one of those things where, like, you know, we see this in a Game of Thrones now, right, where it's 4 years later, 5 years later, and seasons are still a type of deck that you see very consistently. So I think that's what we'll see still going forward. Even if there's not a lot of support for speeders in the future, or in the immediate future, you'll still see, like, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, people are going to show up at a tournament and be like, oh yeah, I thought I would bust out the speeder deck and see how it did. And, like, if people aren't ready for it in the meta, it's going to wreck face.
Yeah, speeders will win regionals next year. I'll make that guarantee now.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about FFG is they're smart about how they package these, right? If they just put the speeders out without the walkers, the speeders would have just rolled over everything.
Sure.
And then if they just put out the walkers without the speeders, the walkers would have probably steamrolled everything, and they'd put them together, and it was like, all right, here you go, synergy.
What happens when a unstoppable object hits an immovable wall?
I believe it wraps a wire around its legs and the wall falls. Pretty sure I saw that in a movie somewhere.
I saw that in a movie too.
Yeah. All right, Ben, I was, you know, looking at the boards a little bit, and I noticed that this discussion has popped up that's basically, hey, Ben, have smugglers and Sith wrecked the game?
I don't know. This is terrible. This is like adding gasoline to the fire, Tiny. I don't understand why. You know, we want to get down and talk about this. But if you've asked me, I feel like I have plenty of stuff to say about it. So let's just go ahead and have that discussion. So this was a topic that appeared at the end of last week on Card Game DB's forums. And so in my reading of it, which is now, I don't think I'm even up to date. I'm looking at it right now. This is Friday, September 6th at 5 p.m. It's already up to 51 replies, 3 pages long. I don't think I've read anything past the second page. So I'm completely beyond what the general feeling is at this point in time. But I think the first two responses really kind of came on the negative side. And as I read through more of the posts, I think people had plenty of like, all right, everybody calm down. I don't think you're thinking about this rationally. Like, I don't think it's broken. And I really come down on that side of the argument with the less – the sky is falling. Watch out. Sith and smugglers are ruining everything. I just don't see it that way. And maybe I am in a minority, and maybe the people who are posting are in the minority, and people really do feel about this very strongly. But I just don't see it like that. I still think, you know, Sith is very strong. Smugglers are very strong. They're fairly simple to put together. But I've very recently had a lot of success with a lot of different affiliations, and you know, maybe it's not Jedi. I still think Jedi is kind of behind the curve, and it's crazy because at the beginning of this whole debacle that we're calling a game, Jedi was crazy above the curve, right? I mean, like, that's what you ran. You ran a Smuggler's Den deck, and so you know, it's just the nature of these type of multi-affiliation games, right? Like, you're going to have, like, the whole cycle isn't complete yet for the Battle of Hoth, right? So who knows what the last force pack is going to contain and how that might change the balance of, you know, smugglers versus some other light side affiliation. And the crazy thing is that in a lot of these situations, it's not like they're, like, pure one or the other, right? I mean, right. I guess it comes down to, like, it's not even, like, are Sith and smugglers ruining the game. The people... I would argue, maybe I'm wrong, and the people who are on the other side of the argument can say this conversely, you know, is it just the three objectives that everybody's thinking about that's ruining the game? Yeah. So Vader, Palpatine, Council, I guess, would be at some point be considered, and then on Smugglers, Han, Chewie, Falcon.
Yeah, and really the point that I make is that every game is like this. I mean, maybe these people haven't played card games before, but the way card games work is there's always two to three dominant decks, and then you build other decks that aren't as good as those decks, and you know that, and you try to outskill them if you want to go that route. I think the problem is that it's a limited card pool, so we have less decks that are dominant, and when this thread started, it was before Battle of Hoth. I feel like now, post Battle of Hoth,
I don't think it was battle before. Well, it was after.
I'll say this. I don't think people had fully evaluated Battle of Hoth.
Sure.
Because I feel like coming out of Battle of Hoth, we have a Rebel deck that is quite viable. We have a number of Navy decks that are quite viable. Would I still say the best pods on either side are Palpatine on one side, Falcon on the other? And when you have that, decks built around the best objectives in the game are going to be good decks. The Palpatine pod deck is always, for the life of this game, going to be good. It has Palpatine, a resource, a choke, a protector, and a lightning. It has five phenomenal cards. That pod is not going away. It will always be good. Sith decks will always be good. I think the complaint is, are they too good and too common? And that's just how the game works. If you want to be competitive, if you played Magic, if you played other games, and you wanted to win every game, you'd be playing the top one or two. So it just comes down to, you know, what is your definition of wrecking the game, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, And I know that there's no counterexample to this for the Sith, but for you know, just based on the data that we have, you know, Matt won with a light side deck that did not have Han, Chewie, or the Falcon in it.
Yep.
He won Gen Con that way. And so, I mean, to say that smugglers are ruining the game, especially those three pods, you know, I think it's very it's pot stirring. You know, you're going to get people who have very heated opinions on this. You know, people who have local playgroups that are maybe not as competitive, and the one guy who refuses to not play Han, Chewie, Falcon always wins, and that can get really kind of, you know, just kind of get tenuous in that situation. But at the same time, I like Tiny said, I for the dark side, I venture to guess that there must be a Navy deck that wins as consistently as Sith does at this point in time. I don't know if I've found it yet, but there's got to be one out there. Navy is really strong right now with the cards that it has at its disposal.
Yeah, and I think the nice thing is, I think Navy was really hard to build well before this pack. I think this pack makes Navy way easier to build well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can just throw together shields and walkers, call that a deck.
Yeah.
You can throw together big vehicles, call that a deck. There's so many decks you can just throw together, call them a deck, and they're really good. It's real similar to Sith, where it can just be like, Vader, Palpatine Council, all broken. I'll throw in any other random four objectives, I got a good deck.
Sure. I mean, I think it's a little less obvious with Navy, and I think that might even, that might please people, right? Like, maybe instead of six key objectives, there's four and four, right? Like, I'm going to take this route, it has to be these four objectives. And if I want to go this route, it has to be these four objectives. But then it leaves a lot of open room to kind of manipulate the cards how you want it to be. I just, you know, I think Navy is really strong. Like I was saying before, I really think that a fast speeder deck beats a Sith control deck at this current point in the meta.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, it'll happen. You know, Palpatine will happen first turn, or Vader will happen first turn, and you'll curse at your opponent for being such a low level, degenerate person. All those us there because I couldn't think of non curse words that would have gotten into those positions. But we'll say low level degenerate person as the PC way of covering my bases. Except for in those instances, you know, you have a really good shot of taking down all of the objectives that they have or they need to before they can get started. I think that's really strong. You just have the ability to overwhelm your opponent in that situation.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, I think we're in agreement. Smugglers and Sith are not wrecking the game. They're just really good.
They're just really good, and they're very competitive. I'm not saying they're not competitive, but
yep.
There's a lot of stuff out there now that I think is definitely mellowing out that, like, oh my god, they're the best in the game. And you're right, they are really strong. But
and one of the problems also is perception equals reality. So if everyone says how good Han, Chewie, Falcon is, and you log on to Octagon, and everyone says they're good, so everyone's like, well, I'll give them a try. And so every single game you play is against Han, Chewie, Falcon, and then you lose a lot because you're testing troopers and other substandard decks, and it's really frustrating, and then you lash out on the boards, and it becomes this cycle of, well, everyone says it's good, must be good, I'm playing it, and then everyone's playing it.
Right. Yeah. I don't think anybody's lashing out on the boards. I think they're trying to have genuine discussions about what they feel is happening to the game. And I think just coming from a perspective of trying not to immediately think that everything is ruined. It just is in my nature. I think that it's healthy to have those discussions, but at the same time, my opinion on the subject is that it is not the case at this moment in time.
Yep, I'm gonna have to agree with you on that one, Ben. I'm going to take the reasoned approach for once.
Wow. Oh, man, it must be 5:00.
Mark it down. Yeah, day and time.
That's one. I have it on the tally here. There's just one tally.
One.
It's all alone. I don't know
my
what it's
first.
It doesn't know what to
do anymore.
Reasoned
approach. It has to be one, man. That's how the world works.
Oh, man. Somewhere out there in another universe, there's a version of this where you're like yelling at everyone, being like, "You're all wrong! You're all wrong! I'm the only one that's right!" Ah!
Oh, parallel universes. All right. Well, Ben, what's your card of the week?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I have so many cards of the week this week. I will try and limit to only one.
What are your 9 cards of the week?
What are my 9 cards of the week? My 9 cards of the week are, it's actually only 3. And I think they're pretty obvious, but I had a couple, especially in the tournament that we played a couple weeks ago with the new cards, just these games where I was just this happened fairly consistently, and I was just so in love with what was happening. But it was the combination of AT-AT, AT-AT assault formation, and forward command post. And that just being like, oh, is it my turn? Let me just destroy all your objectives. Oh, that was so easy. I can't believe that just happened. Ugh. Oh, that was so great. But yeah, no, those cards are a lot of fun together, and I really like them.
Yeah, if at the end of your opponent's turn the dial's at 5, there's a good chance they lost.
Well, no, not 5. You can't.
Yep, because you crank it to 6 at the beginning of your turn.
Oh, okay. At the end of their turn.
Yep.
Right. So if the dial is 6 on your turn.
Yep.
That sometimes there's a very good chance that you can kill all 3 objectives and just be like, oh, is the game over? Is that how, did I get to 12? Is that how that works?
It's really tough for light side because they're looking at it and they're like, the dial's at 5. I can overextend a little bit here to knock out 2 objectives and probably win next turn. There's no way they're going to get it to 12. Bloop, 12.
Yep. It's a lot of fun. That's been a lot of fun right now.
Yep.
What's your card of the week, Tiny?
My card of the week is the Battle of Hoth.
What?
Yeah. I know it's crazy.
No, that's such a cop-out.
The reason I'm picking it is because it is so good and it's really a pro card. And when I say a pro card, a card that's extremely flexible. So you can use it to win edge battles. And in my new speeder deck, I win almost every edge battle. It is the weirdest feeling in the world to win edge battles, and it's all due to Battle of Hoth. In my Walker decks, I'm winning most of my edge battles, and I'm playing an Imperial deck. It's phenomenal. And now, Ben, what's my favorite use of this card?
I feel like the fame... it's when you have the opportunity to blow up one of your own Hoth objectives to then bounce one of your opponent's characters using Prepare for Evacuation.
Oh, it sure is. And I got to do it again this week. And it wasn't quite as great as the first time I got to use it at Kublai Khan to bounce my opponent's Palpatine by blowing up my own when I was resource locked, and which allowed me to win the game. But I was able to win a game this week by going into that last battle and needing to have it unopposed to win, and they had one character, and I wasn't going to be able to kill it, and if I didn't win that turn, I'd probably lose the next turn, and I had my evac with 3 damage on it, and 2 Battle of Hoths in hand, and went Battle of Hoth, kill my own objective, bounce your dude, ball game.
Unopposed ball game.
So, I love some Battle of Hoth.
Yep, well good for you, Tiny, I'm glad that you love some Battle of Hoth.
It is a good card. It's a fun card. I really think it. I think that card alone makes speeders better. I think if they didn't have that, we'd still be in that rebel thing where you're like, come on, Battle of Hoth. Darn it. I didn't get it. I lost.
Right.
But I don't feel like that's the case anymore. It's great to have it. You auto win edge battles then. But even if you don't have it, you get to do that surprise 8 icons in hand. And the first time you do that to a Sith player, look at their face. They realized they lost that edge battle, that there was no way they could lose.
But I put in 5, Tiny. I put in 5. How did you have 8?
That's not even possible. I don't understand.
But you're playing Rebels. I don't get it.
Yeah. I had someone go like, I put in a 2. They twisted it. I had done the math, figured out almost certainly they had a twist. So I let it go. And then I put in 2 cards. And they had like 5 in hand and put in 2 and passed. And I was like, okay, cool. And they were like, no, I could have won that. I was like, yep, coulda, didn't.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
So, good times with Battle of Hoth and winning edge battles with speeder decks.
Yay, card of the week.
All right, Ben, well, that's another episode in of the Smugglers Den.
I think we should just say right here, we apologize to all of our very loyal listeners that this is coming out after our normal release date of Wednesday. It was Labor Day this week, which threw off both Tiny's and mine schedules quite a bit. We had a terrible internet problem when we tried to record on Tuesday morning, so we apologize, our mea culpa. Hopefully you'll still be our fans in a week and a half from now when we release the next one.
I suggest that now we've proven ourselves unreliable, you don't listen anymore.
Wow, that's... I don't think that's... No.
No? Okay. No.
Don't listen to Tiny. We like doing this.
Yep. All right, man. Well, until next time.
May the force be with you.